City. It's the Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles.
I still remember when you used to be nine.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knowles, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I'd like to welcome all of you listening and watching. You can watch today's program by going to Progressive Radio Network and Facebook. And if you can't get it now, download it later. We're going to talk about the latest in health and healing on all topics important to our well-being. We're then going to do an original series. This is part two of the series on environmental disasters, what we can do about them and better understanding them in lay language. Then we're going to play a series of tapes, and these are about freedom of speech and how people's freedom of speech is being curtailed. And this is dangerous. I mean, it's really dangerous, because once they came for Alex Jones, and many people say, yeah, but he's an extremist, and yeah, but then what's them from not coming for someone else who's not? And that's exactly what they've done. So we're going to be doing a series on the platforms that are refusing to allow important, progressive, and moderate voices to offer you information. So we have a lot to share. We always begin with the latest on health and healing. A lot of you are concerned, and rightly so, about glyphosate. In fact, so much so that one individual sued successfully Monsanto, won a huge award, over $200 million, for the cancer that was shown to have been caused based upon his exposure to this toxic pesticide. Almost every single article, which is daily in the media, is showing that it's in our blood, almost everyone's blood, almost ubiquitous in our food supply, unless your food supply is specifically organic. Here's the problem. Most people don't know what to do about it. Therefore, they shrug their shoulders and say, well, maybe it's not enough to cause disease. Yeah, it does cause disease. In fact, the good news is that this was appealed by Monsanto, and a federal judge yesterday upheld the conviction, finding Monsanto responsible, lowered the amount from over 250 million to around 76 million. Now, you can say that's a big reduction, yes, but remember, there could be tens of thousands of more litigations based upon this. So this is not good. So what do we do? What's the solution? The solution is pesticide-free organic foods lower your blood cancer risk by 86%. Who says? The Center for Research in Epidemiology and Statistics at the Sorbonne in France. Just so we understand this, pesticide-free organic foods lower your blood cancer risk by 86% and slashes breast and skin cancer risk by more than a third. The survey of nearly 70,000 French adults comes amid a flurry of interest in the cancer risk of pesticides. And it is spurred by this summer's Monsanto trial, which found Roundup gave a man cancer. Dwayne Johnson, 46, was awarded $250 million by a jury from Monsanto. Now that's been brought down to $76 million. So cutting out pesticides by eating only organic foods could slash your cancer risk by up to 86%. That's the new study. The biggest impact can be seen in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma risk, which plummeted among those who shun chemically sprayed food. That's according to the 70,000 French adults. Overall, organic eaters were 25% less likely to develop any cancer, lung, brain, breast, colorectal, stomach, and their risk of skin and breast cancers dropped by 33%. Earlier this year, the European Food Safety Authority report found that almost 44% of standard food contained one or more chemicals, compared to just 6.5% of organic. So what is the takeaway message? I've been a teacher of organic foods, how to grow them, conservation, how to dry them, how to use them, for a long time. Many of you, thousands of you, came to the Fertler Farm. It was the only real open-to-the-public teaching farm in New York State for nearly 15 years. From Memorial Day through almost Thanksgiving, upstate, in a small area on Buck Road in Stone Ridge, about 20 minutes from New Paltz, about another 15, 20 minutes from Woodstock, I would offer 50 people on a weekend an opportunity, because that's all I could accommodate, to learn everything about conservation, environmental issues, and farming. People would take home whole garbage bags filled with produce. I'd give them a garbage bag, say, go in the garden, pick what you can. They learned about gardening, organic gardening. They would eat food that was grown in the garden. And even what happens when you don't have good soil. And there was no soil. That's why it was called Stone Ridge. But there was a pond there, 4-acre, small pond, and I dredged it out. Took 3 months for the water to get out of the muck and mire that had been there for centuries. And then that was used as topsoil. It was very rich, very healthy, very good. So a lot of you, I'm guesstimating around 6,000 to 10,000, visited a farm during its heyday. And I later sold it. The reason I sold it and I gave it to a couple who were going to run a children's camp up there is because the county would never allow me to build a structure that I could use for year-round, 12 months a year, teaching and people staying. And I could only use it during the summer. So I went from there to Texas and opened up the Healing Springs Ranch, which thousands upon thousands of you visited over the years, only in the month of August. And again, you learned the same thing, just a larger 200-acre environment. So the takeaway message is for those of you who've been using organic or unsprayed food that you grow yourself or from your local farmer's market or local health food store, you've been on the right side of truth and history. All the while, there have been those, the skeptics at Wikipedia, the quackbusters. They say there's no difference between organic and GMO food and non-organic. They're wrong. They've been proven wrong time and again. This is just the latest time they've been proven wrong. Now, there's anti-cancer effects found in natural compound derived from onions. Remember I said an onion a day will keep a stroke away because it naturally thins the blood. And that's good. According to Kumamoto University in Japan, researchers have found that a natural compound isolated from onions has several anti-ovarian cancer properties. And this discovery is a result of research on the effects of what is called ONA, a preclinical model of epithelial ovarian cancer, both in vivo and in vitro. And so the takeaway message is that if you eat onions, and I'd suggest a sweet onion or a red onion, that it has the ability to interfere in tumor development and showed inhibited growth after introduction of ONA. So eat your onions. It not only saves your blood from being thick and allowing the red blood platelets to congregate together and cause a clot, but now it also has been shown to help you with cancer. And that's a big deal. Also, by the way, vitamin C taken at the same time can do it as well. For you red meat eaters, we got the meat. You've all seen that spot. Well, organ meat's particularly dangerous, and it poses a significant health hazard, according to the University of California, Davis. What is it? NEU5GC. That's a non-human sialic acid sugar molecule common in red meat that increases the risk of tumor formation in humans. It is also prevalent in pig organs, with concentrations increasing as the organs are cooked. That's according to the University of California, Davis study and in their School of Medicine. It was also done at the University School of Medicine in China. It was published in a glycoconjugate journal. And so the takeaway message here, when you eat pork, bacon, sausage, on all those delectables in the morning that people consume, you're eating something that can cause cancer. This is very bad for you. Now, for those of us who are vegans, and we've been asking people to reconsider their food choices, they've said, well, where's the science? There's over 1,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature showing the significance of eating a plant-based diet. All good. The Mediterranean diet, the Crete diet, the Formosa diet, the Okinawa diet, the Japanese diet, and now the Spanish diet. They're the longest-lived people as a group in the world now. They passed the Japanese. And not because the Japanese older population are not eating their traditional diet. No. The younger generation doesn't like the older generation's diet. They're going towards a Western diet, high-end processed meats, hot dogs, hamburgers, pizzas. They litter the entire Japanese food industry versus the misos, the tempehs, the tofus, the root vegetables, the sea products that used to be a major part of the diet. So when you eat meat, there's no study that I can find in the peer-reviewed literature that shows you you're healthier, you're protected from cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, ovarian cancer, because you eat meat. All the studies show you're putting yourself at risk. Also, the immune system recognizes this meat byproduct, the NEU5GC, as a foreign threat, and it produces antibodies to counter it. Which means that every time you eat meat, every time, but in particular when you eat pork, like bacon, you're also putting your immune system in hypervigilant drive, which can cause an autoimmune condition. There's another study that showed that grape seed extract is able to reduce post-exercise fatigue. From the Hunan University in China, exercise, of course, is extremely beneficial for people, and I encourage people to do it. But sometimes people exercise to exhaustion. A study conducted by researchers in the science at the Hunan Normal University revealed that grape seed extract potentially reverse post-exercise fatigue, and that also post-exercise fatigue is associated with greater oxidative stress, meaning the normal process of breathing hard to exercise creates the oxidative stress. And the grapeseed has proanthocyanidins, and those have the ability to reduce inflammation, improve the mitochondria, and help with gastrointestinal problems. So the takeaway message is this: exercise, yes, but make sure that you have a small amount of grape seed extract. Now, you could eat the grapes with the seeds. You could juice them. That would be terrific. Or you can get a small amount, they're not expensive, of the grapeseed extract. And that would also help. Now, from Koshima University in Japan comes an interesting story. The smell of lavender is relaxing. Now, I remember the first time I read an article on lavender. I suggested it to my radio audience, at that time on WMCA. And people said, well, how much? And I said, two single drops of lavender on your pillow will help you relax, de-stress, and get a better night's sleep. That was correct, as it turns out. Now, the new research published in Frontiers in Behavioral Neuroscience shows for the first time that the vaporized lavender compound, what is called linalool, L-I-N-A-L-O-O-L, must be smelt, not absorbed in the lungs, to exert its calming effects, so which could be used to relieve preoperative stress and antioxidant disorders. Numerous studies have shown that there is a relaxing effect in linalool, a fragrant alcohol found in lavender extracts, and many assume that absorption into the bloodstream via the airway led to direct effects on brain cell receptors. Not the case. Simply smelling it is enough to have a calming effect. So if you're having a little anxiety, just put a couple drops You can breathe it, put it on a hanky, put it on a sweatshirt. It can relieve it. Also, from Washington University in St. Louis, peanuts, we're talking about organic peanuts, are linked to lower breast cancer risk. That's correct. Girls who eat more peanut butter could improve their breast cancer health or breast health later in life. Girls 9 to 15 who regularly ate peanut butter or nuts, I would suggest the organic nuts, were 39% less likely to develop benign breast disease by age of 30. That's according to the study. Benign breast disease, although non-cancerous, increases the risk of breast cancer later in life. Quote, these findings suggest that peanut butter could help reduce the risk of breast cancer in women, says the senior author, professor of surgery at Washington University, Graham Goldis. And so I suggest this. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Breast Cancer Research and Treatment. Remember, there's a lot of young ladies, 9,039 in the U.S. alone, who enrolled in the Growing Up Today study, and they were monitored, and they found this huge difference in breast cancer. That's just one item. Remember, we shouldn't think monotheistically. We should think comprehensively, out of the box. Look at everything that can prevent cancer, and therefore, you're less likely to develop it. Now, there's new information on the old age survival and an advancing front. This is from Huizong University in China, an article that appeared in the current issue of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences suggests, contrary to some predictions, that may not be a fixed limit to the human lifespan. Quote, old age death decline has driven recent lifespan increases, but there is no agreement about the age pattern of old age deaths. For example, some argue that old age deaths should become compressed at advanced ages, and others argue that old age deaths should become more dispersed with age. So they looked at 5 decades in 20 developed countries and found that there's no pattern. Here's what I can tell you, because this is an area of my expertise. I spent 33 years as a research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology. I had 2 department titles. One was the Director of Anti-Aging Research, and the other was of Nutrition Research. They actually worked together. And what I found was that if I did just one thing, one nutrient, for example, I could get some modest change in the aging process in the experiments I was doing. However, it was when I changed everything. For example, putting in special lighting, having no cages, having everything calm and soothing, having a challenge so that the rats in this case that were able to run in this 3,000 square foot facility would have to find food, and it would be organic food, fresh every day, and juices that I made every day. I'd make gallons of juices and bring it in and put it in little areas and have them be able to communicate, and not once was I ever bitten, not once, because they'd come up. There were certain ones that I could identify that would come up every day and sit on my desk. It would freak people out. In fact, so freaky, I had to put a glass barrier down the side wall with enough room for people to squeeze in and sit and watch my experiments, all of which involved never harming but always helping an animal live a longer life. But it was when I brought everything together that I could double an animal's life. I now see we could do that in human beings. I am definitely of the opinion right now that we could add a minimum of 10 vitally healthy years to a person's life, even up to the age of 80. I just saw that Michael J. Fox, whether it's true or not, I don't know, because it's on the internet, you can't always believe that, was suffering from advanced Parkinson's and had gone into its advanced stages. Also, that Sandra Day O'Connor, the former Supreme Court Justice, has acknowledged today that she's suffering from dementia, possibly Alzheimer's. This is an area that I also specialize in, helping people with advanced brain conditions. And we've seen remarkable improvements and turnarounds. So if anyone wants to reach out to them and let them know that there are other options, and if they're willing to try them, great, because we can rewire the brain. We can detoxify it. We can get a lot of that amyloid plaque out. We can remove a lot of the damage from microstrokes that create little gray matter, white matter. We can, in effect, de-age our bodies. And many of us are doing it. If you doubt me, you should have been at my high school reunion. Whoa. I actually came in and said I was my son. Who are you? I'm Gary Noll's son. Oh, okay. Nobody knew. So until I started to talk to some of them. So if you do what everyone else is doing, you'll age the way everyone else is aging. If you do it differently, you can slow down your aging. But now with the latest science, we can actually reverse a lot of organ and tissue damage, a lot of stem cell research, but you can actually create new stem cells. And there are some certain foods, especially the chlorophyll foods, that are good in that. And I'll be doing some writing on articles to share with you on how you can reverse your aging process in the near future. And finally, how to increase your GABA levels, gamma-aminobutyric acid levels in the brain. So when it comes to brain function, it's always important, according to Natural News, to maintain just the right balance of neurotransmitters, and that's what GABA is, so that your brain remains in top condition. And one neurotransmitter whose deficiency has been linked to different mental conditions is gamma, G-A-M-M-A, aminobutyric, A-M-I-N-O, amino, which is amino acid, butyric, B-U-T-Y-R-I-C, acid, or GABA. And fortunately, there are now many ways to increase the GABA levels naturally. And neurotransmitters, by the way, are chemicals responsible for communication between brain cells. And these can be classified based upon on purpose they serve in the body. And GABA, in particular, is the primary inhibitory neurotransmitter that's responsible for slowing down brain activity. Unfortunately, some people do not produce enough GABA due to factors such as diet and anti-anxiety drugs, and lack of sleep, and immune breakdown. And so what can you do today, now, to help with your GABA levels? Well, how about CAVA, C-A-V-A? That's an herb that's commonly taken in the form of a relaxation tea. Many studies have shown that drinking it will relieve stress and increase GABA levels. Psychobiotics. Now, a psychobiotic are just probiotics with beneficial brain effects. Their way of helping includes the production of GABA, which has been observed in more than 24 bacterial strains. Magnolia bark from the magnolia tree. Magnolia, M-A-G-N-O-L-I-A. And magnolia is a compound found in the, it's actually called honkoiol, H-O-N-O-K-I-O-L, and mangalol. These are compounds found in the magnolia bark that promote relaxation by binding to GABA receptors and serving as positive modulators. And generally, it's drunk as a tea. Valerian root, I'm sure many of you have heard of valerian root. It's similar to the magnolial, and there is an acid in it called valerianic acid. It's found in the valerian and acts as a positive modulator. You get a better mood. You feel good. It can also it can deal with insomnia and general anxiety disorder, even pain in menopausal women. Then probably the easiest to get, lemon balm, B-A-L-M. It contains rosmarinic acid, a psychoactive compound known to increase GABA levels. And also your exercise will improve GABA, and fermented foods. I mean, they're rich in probiotics, and they reduce anxiety by improving GABA levels. And we're talking about also apples, barley, beans, corn, kale, onions, potatoes, spinach, and tomatoes and yams. All are good GABA-rich foods. That's the latest on health and healing, and we're starting something brand new today. Because we have so many problems without solutions in the mainstream media, we here at the Progressive Radio Network are now setting up information sites that will allow you to get more information. For example, over the next 6 months, I'm hiring multiple archivists to work on over 27,000 hours of material, and we're doing it by category. So let's say if it's health, we edit out anything that is not accurate today or timely. But if you wanted on a specific topic, we're going to do it by topic. So if you wanted cancer, you wanted weight control, you wanted allergies, to overcome allergies, everything in the peer-reviewed literature will be in that place. When it comes to guests, we're going to have a whole conversation with the Remarkable Mind, over 1,000 guests. The full interviews you'll be able to download. If it's on investigative reporting, all of the original investigative reporting will be there by topic. And because there are so many things hitting us simultaneously, like, for example, the red tide in Florida, now it's around the entire state, not just on a couple counties like Lee County and Collier County on the West Coast and over Port St. Lucie and other places on the East Coast. It's the entire state, and it's 40 miles wide, and it's killed billions of sea creatures, fish, and also fish mammals such as the turtles, the dolphins, and the manatees. So what do we do about it? Well, earlier today, I did a segment showing a news clip of the problem, and then I gave the solutions. And I just told people to go to this, click the site below, and you'll get free information. It's articles. And we have now information coming to you later today on vaccines. We'll show you the problem, mass immunization with vaccines, such as the flu vaccine. And then we show you the problem with the flu vaccines and the science behind it, not to tell you not to take a vaccine, what you do or don't do with vaccines, but to show you that there's another part of the story you haven't heard. So I'm going to be doing this on a regular daily basis, and that way you can share the information. The key is what we have up on the internet, share it. We have posted 12 articles challenging Wikipedia and their content and their editors and Jimmy Wells, the co-founder. Share those. Send them out everywhere. Send all of our articles out everywhere you can, because the internet and the platforms are shutting people down. They haven't shut us down yet, but boy, they've shut so many other great sites and sources down. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, a new, original, in-depth, but abbreviated in-depth, concentrated information about the environment. And I'm going to show you how all this works. So please stay with us. Back in a moment. I'd like to welcome all of you. By the way, this evening, we have a guest. Richard Gale, our producer, found this gentleman, and he said he's like a wise man from the mountains, and he's going to give us some really interesting insights into the end-of-life process from a different perspective, something we've never heard before. That's tonight at 7 o'clock on Progressive Commentary Hour. I'm looking forward to it. I have not interviewed him ever, didn't know he existed, but Richard found him, so we're going to have him on. It'll be an interesting show tonight. But joining me in studio right now is a person who's been with us for, I don't know how many decades, long time, over 30 years, and Valerie Van Cleve. And you'll, if you notice all the films, look on there and you'll see Valerie prominently displayed in the credits for editing and producing and helping direct and everything else. Valerie, you have some information for us?
Yes, I do. Well, first I want to let everyone know that we will be having a premiere showing of our latest film, Curing the Incurable, now that you're back in New York with us, and we'll be letting them know the dates and locations on that as soon as it's set up. But we are having some fantastic success with the film, even though it hasn't opened officially. We have, for the last 3 weeks, put it into the film festival circuit, and we've already been accepted into 9 festivals, which is very unusual.
Yes.
And wonderful. And some of the festivals are the London City Film Awards, the Oneros Film Awards in Italy, Miami Independent Film Festival.
That's a big one.
That's a big one. And so is the London
in Italy.
And the Mind Film Festival in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The Wind International Film Festival, which is also all over the world and quite prestigious. And we're showing in the Beach Cities Film Festival in Laguna Beach at the Sinopolis Theater, and in San Juan Capistrano in Dana Point. We will be at the Regency Theater there in California. And we've been, we're finalists now in the Hollywood International Independent Documentary Awards, and we have just received an award for the Best Inspirational Feature by the Los Angeles Film Awards Festival.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, so that's very good.
Good. That's a lot of, this early in the season, that's a lot.
It is. It really is. I'm amazed.
Yeah. Well, also for those in the audience, if you live in any of the areas we just mentioned, Val and I are so busy filming the two big documentaries right now, one on poverty, called Friend, Can You Spare a Dime? The New Poverty, plus the one on the environment, Saving the Planet, and that's worldwide filming. We don't have time to go to these. So if anyone would ever like to go to a film festival, we'll get you in, and you can see how wonderful they are. You'll see competition from all over the world, and go to the award ceremony. If we win, go up and, you know, give a little speech and send the award back off to us. And we'll pay for your dinner and it'll be a fun experience.
Yeah, they always have a nice party. It's a good fun thing to do.
I love to go when I can because I meet filmmakers from all over the world, and we talk shop. How long did it take you to do the film? How was it financed? What other festivals have you been able to get in? Because most people don't get into festivals. It's very hard. The competition is 10,000 a year. And some of these festivals have real strict standards. And you're lucky, you know, as one guy who did a great film, I saw it, on Stalin's purge of the Ukrainian citizens, which caused millions to die of starvation in the 1930s. I thought he did a brilliant job. Anyhow, he said that for 3 years he had only gotten into 2 festivals. And, you know, we're very fortunate. And the reason we are very fortunate, the reason we have won more awards than any other documentarians I'm aware of in the world, if someone knows, someone has done more, let us know, is because I never have done a documentary I wanted to do. Not once. I only do documentaries the audience wants done and needs. That's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
I had an interesting conversation last evening with someone who's works for a major company and came over and introduced himself, and we had this little conversation. And he grew up unvaccinated because his parents listened to the show. And he even talked about how his dad, back in the mid-1960s, was working through my office. It wasn't my official office. It was kind of like a hidden office so we could do anti-war material. And that goes back a long time. And he said that he has won any awards, but the difference is because the, quote, the suits upstairs tell him what they want, and they never ask the audience what they want. And if you want to not succeed, don't pay attention to your audience's needs.
Well, they don't have much of a choice, I'm afraid.
No, they get the big checks. They get the big checks every week, so they do what they're told to do instead of what they should do. Thank you, Val.
Thank you.
So if you ever want to attend a festival, because we're probably going to, at this rate, we'll probably get into 60 to 80 festivals this year around the world. Just leave us your name and at prnstudio@gmail.com, and we'll contact you. We've had people go and pick up awards in the past and enjoy the festival. So good.
All right. Thank you.
Yesterday I asked for callers. I didn't have a chance to take calls, unfortunately, but we do right now. We have a caller on the line. What's your name, please? Hello?
Hello?
What's your name?
Yes, this is Maymuna Thomas. Hi, Gary.
Maymuna.
How are you?
Why does that name sound familiar?
Maybe I'm one of your favorite people at the villa.
Oh, yes, okay. Yes. You were just at the retreat a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago.
Yes. Yes, dear.
Were you, your voice sounds familiar. Are you the woman who came in a wheelchair?
Yeah.
Okay. In excruciating pain?
Yes.
What else, what other problems did you have?
Well, I have a lower back lumbar problem from surgery from an accident in 2004 and 2014. And which originally stemmed from a bicycle accident in like 1979. Nevertheless, I also have a hip problem and two knees. I had arthroscopic surgery in my two knees and my right shoulder, and arthritis in my body. So I've been dealing with a lot through the years, and previous to that, I had Guillain-Barré many years ago, and then endocarditis and hypothyroidism, so many things that I've dealt with right from a kid. And so I'm blessed to be here and blessed to still be pushing on to do better. I went up to the Gary's retreat, and my brother had gotten after me to go, Kwesi, and I'm so grateful that I went, because it's like day and night. I mean, although I was putting effort through to get better through the years, and even more so this year, but nonetheless, going up to the retreat changed my life. I was already a vegetarian, eating fish sometime, but nevertheless, I'm a full-fledged vegan now. And I mean, the difference in a week that is just astounding. I'm Gary. They had me in the morning doing short little runs, encouraged me to put down my walker, which I actually came through the airports in wheelchair. I had a walker, but not in good shape at all. And now I'm actually running, not running, I'm sorry, correction. I keep saying that. I imagine that I'm going to be running one of these days soon. But nonetheless, I go for my walk every day since I came back home. I'm in New York in the Coney Island where the boardwalk is. I go every morning, even the day that it rained, because Gary and them took us out into the rain, and we did our walk anyway. And I walked in the rain. And I mean, I'm so thrilled that every day, when I come back from my walk, I can't wait for the next morning to be able to go on my walk again. And
when you were down there on the final day, you went out with John Q. You didn't take your walker or a cane. You walked unaided at a quick pace for a mile and a half. And you were very excited by that. And have you done further than that since you've been back?
Yes, I have. Day before yesterday and today, I had some kind of a cold or, flu or something. But day before yesterday, I walked 7 miles, 3 miles up and 3 miles back. I was in shock. I couldn't believe it. Well, what happened was while I was walking, I hadn't been on the boardwalk walking in so many years that I forgot that they have the little insignia letting you know how many miles. So when I walked, I was walking, I saw three. I said, what? You know, I'm thinking, I don't know what I'm thinking. I'm saying, I see 3 miles. I said, oh, my God, I can't believe it. So I passed there, and I came back. And so I must have done, like, 7 miles because 3.5, I would say, going in. And then I came back. And I did that day before yesterday without stopping. All the other days I had to stop them falling over the railing, breathing, you know, but I went further, and yet I didn't stop. I turned around and I came
so
back.
So you did, yes, 7 miles without a cane or a walker, nonstop.
Without a cane, that's right. That's right. And every day I can actually feel my body getting stronger. It's amazing. I mean, I know I was praying for miracles, but I feel my body getting I'm so excited. And then the diet also. I'm really sticking to the vegan, going to, you know, buy the organic food, which I bought before, but not like now. I'm eating more so the way we were eating at the ranch. And, you know, it's just so, I'm just thrilled.
Happy to hear this because I saw the pain you were in when you were there at the first day. On a scale of 1 to 10, what was your pain level when you arrived?
When I arrived, my pain level might have been like an 8.
And what is it now?
I don't have any pain right now.
So you went from an 8 to 0.
To 0. And usually I never go to 0. But
and you couldn't walk without a walker, and now you just walk 7 miles without stopping.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
What's your age?
I'm 69. I'll be 70 in April.
Great. Well, I'd say that should motivate some people to realize there is hope, and I'm glad that you're seeing your own journey in life, a reverse from disease and pain and infirmary to one of being able to do things you haven't done so you get your health back, your mojo back, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Absolutely. I look forward to seeing you all also. Thank you so much, Gary.
All the best. Those are the stories we love to hear. People who've reversed decades of aging, disease, pain, and doing it all without drugs. And I might mention there was a whole family, 4 board-certified physicians there, including one of New York's top pain people, and he couldn't believe what he was saying. And yet he was right there listening to the people. But he's open-minded, and I was happy. This is his second trip. He said he came back because he wanted to show his father and mother, these are top New York physicians, what's possible from a different point of view. Good. Now, I want to share a different perspective on the environment. This was presented and researched by myself and our executive producer, Richard Gale. It is called Prepare Yourself for Category 6 Superstorms. Because the year 2017 was a record-breaking year for extreme weather and environmental catastrophes since records started to be kept in the 19th century. The Arctic experienced temperatures up 70 degrees, that's in the Arctic, above normal. Many countries were baked in unusual heat waves, killing thousands. Incidents of drought, extreme typhoons in the Pacific and hurricanes in the Atlantic, flash floods, wildfires appeared daily in international news headlines. As recent as 2014, the World Meteorological Organization, following an analysis of NASA satellite footage of carbon dioxide movement around the planet, concluded that our warming planet had entered, quote, uncharted territory at frightening speed. But 2017 also was the year when the statistical figures came in for 2016, and the World Meteorological Organization reported that CO2, concentrations in the atmosphere rose at a record speed. Currently, CO2 is at the highest level in 800,000 years. If anyone holds any doubts that climate change is a hoax, a fictional conspiracy or fantasy, 2017 should have been a wake-up call to the most obstinate denialist. Now, in 2018, as we're leaving 2018, new record-breaking extreme events, including two surprise hurricanes that raised the Carolinas, the Florida Panhandle, and much of Alabama and Georgia, should reinforce convictions that the days of normal weather have ended. For over a decade, scientists have warned about our current days of extreme weather events, but mainstream media continues to undermine scientists' warnings and spew newspeak in lockstep with Washington for the sake of political correctness. However, for those who jumped on the bandwagon years ago when atmospheric and geological scientists voiced serious concerns about global warming and their dire predictions, it was a year with no huge surprises, except for the rapid acceleration of warming trends. Yet even after record-breaking heat waves and wildfires and superstorms, climate change denialism continues to prevail across the United States. Aside from President Trump's recent backpedaling on previous delusions that climate change is a hoax created by the Chinese, yes, he actually said that, he still allows the world's largest polluters, as did Barack Obama, as did Hillary Clinton, as did George Bush, as did Bill Clinton, they all allowed the largest polluters completely off the hook, while rolling back regulations that set at least some limits on greenhouse gas emissions and toxic pollution of the environment. During Trump's recent interview on 60 Minutes, he acknowledged the reality of climate change, but he stopped there. He continues to perpetuate corporate and right-wing propaganda and conspiratorial paranoia that the verdict is unsettled whether humans are the cause. Our soothsayer-in-chief claims it will all change. If there are no hurricanes next season, surely Trump will take credit for that. All will improve, and there is nothing but progress and prosperity ahead, regardless of how rapid Trump's policies bring our species closer to real extinction. Our ability to reverse any climate trends will require far more than the next technological invention. It also demands a functional government, but that remains too taboo for Washington or other nationals. They're addicted to the capitalist growth through fossil fuel mythology. In the meantime, victims from the recent Florence and Michael hurricanes are experiencing a different reality outside the bubble that now hovers around the White House compound. Hurricane Michael was the third strongest superstorm to strike the United States in its history. Mexico Beach and Panama City on the Florida Panhandle were demolished. The worsening matters the region of Florida, Alabama, and Georgia, where Michael was most fierce, are already among the U.S.'s poorest. Many of the residents are too economically poor to stock up on food. They don't have insurance. They don't have rations to carry them through the painful ordeal, even if they had wanted. And be realistic. When you hear about a storm like Michael, Category 4, 1 mile an hour under Category 5 that hits the mainland, do you ever hear anything a couple weeks later? Are you aware that right now 1.3 million people in Puerto Rico still have not recovered? Many still do not have electricity or clean water? No, we're only there in the media before a storm, during a storm, and then we go on to the next news cycle. Hurricane Michael adds to the growing number of case studies for the new reality facing the Atlantic states. The superstorm's rainfall is estimated to have been the worst in U.S. history and the most devastating storm to hit Houston. 19 trillion gallons of water dropped on Houston. For 5 days, the capital of America's fossil fuel industry was flooded with torrential rains and wave surges, shutting down and damaging oil refineries and chemical plants along Texas's eastern coast. Over 1 million pounds of toxic pollutants flooded the surrounding environment and greenhouse gases released into the atmosphere. Such events fall outside the realm of computerized simulations and cannot be accurately included in predictive climate models. And for this reason, scientific conclusions are often far more conservative than the actual state of the planet. The severity of Michael resulted from a combination of global warming, conditions that are going to accelerate more rapidly in the years and decades ahead, in addition to a tiny low pressure system along the Yucatan Peninsula. The Gulf of Mexico's water was up to 4 degrees above normal, hotter. In the region off Florida, temperatures were up 8 degrees warmer Fahrenheit. Hurricanes weaken when the deeper water pulled into the vortex is colder. However, superstorms build speed and become stronger when less cold water is being drawn. Writing for the New York Times, Harvey Fountain summarized the triple threat exhibited by Michael that made it far more devastating along the Florida Panhandle, to the surprise of atmospheric and oceanic scientists. Quote, more rain in the larger storms on rising seas, he wrote. And this is the new recipe that will assume that there'll be many more Michaels. They're going to be visiting the Atlantic coastal states and more frequently in the future. It'll be a long time before life is restored to the towns and families in Michael's path, if ever. A year later, neighborhoods and towns outside of Houston and Galveston are still struggling after Category 4 Hurricane Harvey drowned the Texas coastline during Trump's watch. Texas reporters have cataloged over 100 toxic chemical releases. One chemical plant in Baytown, east of Houston, spilled 500 million gallons of industrial wastewater, including benzene, butylene, and other known human carcinogens. There's no place for it to go. That's all clay. Clay is a cap. That's why you want clay under a lake that you make or a pond, because the water will stay in. But what happens when you have 19 trillion gallons of water and now it's completely a toxic stew with all these known and suspected carcinogens? Where's it going to go? It's going to stay in the soil. And that means that it's dry when it's not raining. That means that every time you walk, every time you drive on it, every time the wind blows, it's going to go in the air and you're breathing it. Many tons of other industrial chemicals were also released throughout Houston's petrochemical corridor into the surrounding neighborhoods. The government failed to evacuate residents most exposed to life-threatening levels of high toxic substances. Texas Governor Greg Abbott decreed the industrial pollution was, quote, an act of God. Really? Do you really believe that? I hope not. And you said that it should be forgiven. No. The Houston Chronicle reported that Texas officials completely ignored the release of dioxin, ranked as one of the most dangerous chemicals for human health by the World Health Organization. The EPA did send a single mobile air monitoring van, but that was almost a week after the hurricane passed. When a Category 4 or 5 hurricane hits land, we are fully aware of the devastation left in its wake. Hourly, we observed images of flooding, submerged cars, blown or collapsed roofs, snapped trees on the news and weather channels. But these disturbing images don't show the invisible feedback mechanisms due to humanity's greenhouse gas emissions that are contributing to these superstorm severity and destructive potential, nor extreme storm feedback loops that further contribute to the acceleration of climate change. Extreme hurricanes and typhoons create updrafts lifting moisture into the stratosphere, which begins between 8 and 10 miles above the Earth's surface, higher along the equator. Not only does this moisture reduce the ozone layer, which resides in the lower stratosphere, it also carries water vapor into this higher atmospheric zone, which otherwise has very little, and it remains there longer. The largest percentage of greenhouse gases emissions during our civilization releases residue, excuse me, into the troposphere, the layer immediately above our heads. But any gases that reach above this level will linger far longer and therefore advance the warming of the planet. We need to get over the idea that extreme superstorms like Florence and Michael are natural disasters. There's nothing natural about them, or the consequences of an imaginary natural cycle. Since 1970, the frequency of superstorms has doubled. Carrie Emanuel is MIT's atmospheric scientist, who is recognized as an international expert on superstorms. To rid ourselves of the false opinion that these record-breaking climate events are simply natural, Emanuel says, quote, "The phrase natural disaster is an attempt to lay blame where blame really doesn't rest." It suggests that not only are we as individuals helpless, but so are our government and international institutions incapable of doing anything to lessen the threat of future life-threatening climate-related catastrophes. But according to over 95% of the world's climate scientists, this belief is patently wrong. There were a record number of devastating hurricanes in the Atlantic and Caribbean during the 2017 storm season. Hurricane Irma, which pummeled Puerto Rico into darkness, was the strongest tropical storm in the Caribbean on record. George Washington University estimates that 3,000 Puerto Ricans died. As of this week, 1.8 million still do not have electricity. Category 4 Hurricane Harvey leveled Houston with rising sea levels combined with the most rain dumped at any single time during the storm in U.S. history, 5 feet at one time. The capital of the oil industry has more rain in a week than it usually gets in a year. NOAA estimated the bill for the damage of Harvey was $125 billion, the second most costly storm after Katrina at $161 billion. And most of that was uninsured. On my next discussion, I will talk about who pays for this. How can we prevent this? What is the likely outcome of all this? It's not good. We're not being told the truth. We're not being told the truth by the federal government, the state governments, the people who have a fiduciary and a moral responsibility to help people who are uninsured and can't get out of harm's way. I will deal with that in depth. My suggestion now is go to prn.fm, prn.fm. Read this article in its entirety. I was only able to share a portion of it, plus our part one article, which is posted. So we have part one and two. Next week, I'll do part three and four of what will be a five-part series on the environment, telling you the truth, showing you the problem, and more importantly, explaining options for solutions. Share this information. Again, go to prn.fm. The article's free. You don't have to buy anything. Read it, download it, share it. That way we can start to be responsible, come together, and find positive solutions, and more importantly, get people the truth so they can get out of harm's way. You don't want to be the last person to believe that a Category 5 could hit your area, and then it hits, and you were unprepared. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for watching and listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program, and tonight at 7 p.m., a really interesting and original program. Have a nice day.